This is June 19th, and there will be no meeting in July, so the next meeting is August 22nd, 1993, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Well, my friends, good morning.
Good morning.
And I'd like to just bring back into your awareness something that we have discussed often in the past, but in such a perhaps relaxed manner that you didn't get the impact of how important it is. So we'd like to go through it once again so that in the years to come you will have an ever-present way of dealing with difficulties, pain, sorrow, loss, fear, guilt, any of those strange things that I know mankind rarely experiences. But in order for this to have been a useful teaching, it must hold deeply within it the ability at almost a moment's notice, without thought, without any kind of preparation, without any kind of struggle or seeking or searching or grasping, to be able to have a way of being present in the moment that is so clearly compassionate and open and sweet and uplifting that under any circumstances this can be part of your ongoing experience of being. Now, there are many traditions who cover this in a very stylized way, and I would like to say now that these are very useful ways. Example, if you are used to the idea of mantra, you either use a mantra itself, as in a mala, and do the beads, or you just hold them desperately in your hand, or in Mary Margaret's case, just grasp it around your throat very hard. Whatever works. But often that takes, in order to really, all of these exercises or ways of being in the moment take some initial preparation time in order to become that spontaneous, easeful thing that helps you so instantly. So in the mantra work, which is not the focus of this, there are many, many excellent advisors on that. I would imagine for most of you, those of you who like humor, which most of you should if you've put up with all the bad jokes all these years here, that you should perhaps consider Ram Dass, who I think is a very solid, has a very solid approach to total consciousness. So there's one way. Another way, of course, for those of you who are deeply immersed in the Catholic way or the Christian way, there is that the moments of intimate prayer in the moments of difficulty, the surrender to whatever's whatever kind of prayer is eminent in your heart and mind, any kind of turning your awareness toward. And all of those, my friends, are absolutely magnificent, and I highly recommend them. That is not, however, the thrust of what we will discuss today. What is necessary, and I want to emphasize this, we have tried as best we can to give you as few rules as possible, because in dealing with humanity, we have found that that's the best way to have you do nothing, is to present a rule that you have to follow. Because then you will follow it for a certain length of time, and then that part of you that is ego-structured will rise up and begin to bang against that which has been presented in order to help you. Do any of you recognize this phenomenon? It is an almost spontaneous occurrence of another part of being, which is very valid, which is the part of being that says, I'm just fine the way I am. I don't have to do anything. Why doesn't the world just see me in my own magnificence at this moment? Now, the reason that I call this a valid statement is that from the very deepest point of view, you are a magnificent occurrence exactly as you are, as you say in these days, with your warts and all. And the idea that you can only be beautiful and acceptable and so forth is with the removal of these difficulties and blemishes of soul and character and emotion and mind and lifestyle and social habits and eating habits and clothing habits. I mean, it's endless. All of those rules are only, in the deepest sense, a detraction from you to really begin to experience the truth of your magnificence with warts totally in place. And the thrust of this teaching all these years has been to try to convince you that the quickest way to a knowing that all's well in the midst of whatever chaotic moment you might be experiencing, the best and clearest way to that center point is the continuing practice of being totally alive and awake and present in the moment. Now, we would like to add that the thing that we have said that is easily forgotten is that unless these simple relaxings into the moment, unless they're practiced moment after moment, day after day, in your extremities, they aren't going to be there for you. You're going to find yourself falling into deep pits of depression and fear and anxiety and remorse. And they are like a wonderful life vest that you haven't really put on properly. So instead of holding you afloat, it's hitting you in the face, which is not a very, useful device for saving your life. And I want you to know that we realize that when you are in these moments of extremity, it feels so as if you were struggling for your breath, does it not? That when the fear comes into you, when the self-pity, when the rage, when the anger, when the misunderstandings, when the confusion, when the despair, it is like that. It is a life-threatening, I don't mean that you're going to die from it, but that the feelings of ebullient life are definitely on the wane, and what is present is this oppressive feeling of the confusion of things. I want you, please, to remember this statement. You need never be confused. That is not a necessary response to any situation. The reason that you are confused is you have been trained to go to your mind to present an answer, and the mind is the last to know. Your mind is the last of your available processes to tell you the way out in the moment to your distressful moments of consciousness. Your mind is the last. Your mind has been programmed. Please, I know this is a repetition. Please just bear with me. The mind is a programmed substance, energy field, activity, whatever you want to call it, that has as its basic two polarities. It has a polarity here and here, meaning it has the ability to think very different things about the very same subject. Your minds are very good at thinking two thoughts, three thoughts, five thoughts about the same subject. Now, that doesn't decrease confusion. If you think about it a moment, it increases your confusion. Because now, when you are going to the one thing that says, well, I don't know, here are your choices. Well, at the moment when panic is arising, when you feel that you can hardly breathe, when terror is coming into your mind and your body is heating up in response, this is not a helpful kind of an answer. But what we ask again and again is to come to the realization, to remember the sweetness, as we've discussed before, that just as there are clouds in the ever-present sky, these feelings, these fears, these responses are present in an ever-clear sky. And it is the vastness of the clarity of the moment that is ever-present. You cannot really think of clouds without having a knowing that sky is present. And even if from your, you see, it's very interesting, and I use this analogy because I think many of you have experienced this. When you are on the ground and you are in a location that is covered with cloud, and you look up from the airport transport point, and you look around and you see nothing but gray cloud. You see, it's everywhere. And in that moment, there is a forgetfulness that there is the vault of the blue sky. No matter what the nature of the clouds, you know that there is a way up and through those into the vastness. So you pay your money, you get on your aircraft. In fact, this is one reason why so many of you do this kind of thing, and you just rise up out of the old and the ordinary and the tedious and the repetitious and the habituated. Does that sound like your lives? And in that moment, instead of realizing that you can do the same thing without paying for your ticket, you go to this expense, and then the experience is, lo and behold, the plane lifts off, you feel yourself pull away. Is not that one of the most exciting moments in all of the space in all of your travel is when the flight finally, when the craft itself breaks loose from the pull of the ground, and it's the liftoff, and it's the lurching into, and then the moving through the clouds, and now you can see nothing, and then all of a sudden there it is. And there is not only the heavens above, but there's that magnificent sun somewhere in its majestic somewhere. And you look down, and all of the past and all of the left behind is there. But at the same time, this awareness has broken and expands. And there is almost always, if you're paying attention, a... whether you're conscious or not of what is happening, there is almost always, unless you're terrified of this kind of experience, which I understand some people can be, understandably, there is an elation and a wonder and a remembrance. Now, since you can't spend your life taking off of airstrips, we would like to suggest that what we are asking is a sweet and gentle ongoing remembrance of something that you don't have to think about and hope about, but something that you actually experience, which is the experience of being able to lift off through something and move into a clarity that is huge and expanding. Now, I told you that in order to do these things, you're going to have to do a little bit of ritualistic homework, and this is where the homework comes in. Now, I am being very literal when I say to you that for some of you, the fastest way to this kind of place where you know are no longer fragmented with fear and so forth comes through practicing again and again the total experience, not just the thinking of, but the experience of moving through the fog and the confusion and allowing yourself to feel the clarity of the ever-present sky and its incredible vault of vastness. Now, that is a very old technique that the reason that it works on the psyche so miraculously is it has the ability to show you something that you believe because you've experienced it, which is combined with a spiritual truth, which is you can move out of confusion in just a moment into clarity. And the best way to do it is to allow yourself to be in that vast moment in the midst of your confusion. So the practice is simply when you feel yourself to be irritated, when you feel yourself to be all of the long list, to just in that moment, if you'll only just remember that you have the ability to move through and out in an instant. It doesn't take more than an instant to envision and to visualize these techniques. And you say to me, that is just a trick of consciousness. And I say to you, give yourself 2 years and let's talk. Try this day after day after day, the most mundane. You find yourself doing something you don't like. You feel yourself to be hemmed in to a situation. You know, you're in prison. You're in a certain situation. Your life is presented in a certain way. You feel the closing in. You know, you're all human. You share these kinds of feelings. And so in that moment, instead of going to the mind, which you see how you trap yourself, my friends, is you go to your mind and think of a future event. Well, that'll make me feel, you know, you kind of stroke yourself. Well, that's all right, dear. I'll be out of this in 3 hours, 6 hours, 12 years, another lifetime. and when you pay attention to how you get out of those moments, now you will realize that you do one of two things. Either jump to the future and fantasize a visual that may never happen. And a part of you knows that you're fooling yourself because you know that many of the things that you visualize, for example, I'll be out of here in 6 hours, and you do go out and you get in a traffic jam and hung up on the freeway for 45 minutes, which is no more pleasurable than sitting in your little cube, you know, thinking about whatever's next. Now, the other trick is to go to the past and to dwell on past things, either happy or sad. But what you never do is to simply make this present moment exactly as it is, sitting in that chair in front of that computer in this small cubicle, or whatever it might be, and to allow that moment to expand. Instead of getting out of it, you have to really understand the elasticity of human consciousness. And one of the basic skills is the ability at any moment, at any moment to expand out of any tight, compacting situation and expand into the vastness. And it is a technique that you begin to use moment after moment after moment. And as you do this, you begin to feel the reality of it. Now, I will grant you, when you first begin, you have to kind of quiet down the doubting part of you, the part of you that says, this is too simple, this is too easy, or this is too whatever, and just be willing to be the courageous voyagers in consciousness. You know, my friends, all of you would probably go through horrendously frightening events, such as hurling yourself into spacecraft and flinging yourself out to, I don't know, Neptune or past or wherever, and enjoy the thought of that. But when we ask you simply to use your voyaging technique of being in the moment, in the tightness, and being expansive at the same time, you deny that both are possible. You deny that you have these multifaceted parts to you that can do many, many things at the same time. Now, my friends, you know, without my saying so, that as a human being, you are in one instance in time-space running a full body. Your body is totally running. It's functioning. However well or not, it's still functioning. Your mind is working a million miles a moment. You are breathing, however mysteriously you do that. You don't even know how you do that. You are having emotional responses, whether you're conscious of them or not, on an ongoing basis. You are already a multi-dimensional, exciting, expansive piece of, if you want to use this mundane term, cosmic material. And all of this is happening in this exciting moment. And you limit yourself to being a body trudging down this linear pavement, and all those vast reaches of bliss and peace and a sense of integrity and appropriateness and all rightness, which are available in the moment of the most excruciating pain, physical, mental, emotional, whatever. All of these states are available in the moment, but you have got to practice. And if you want to continue to view yourself as a small little body suffering and somehow, you know, what is the idea? I guess you're just kind of groping through life, hoping that in one grope you'll get the right way, and that if you can't do it, maybe somebody else will step in your path and drag you down the road or something, forgetting the magnificence of your capabilities. I think if we want to be very simplistic about what we've talked about all these years, is to excite you about your complexity as well as your simplicity. To understand that you, to teach yourselves how magnificently capable you are, how wondrously expansive and loving and compassionate and strong and courageous and victorious. We've talked to you a lot about please allowing yourself to feel the wonder of your valiant and magnificently courageous stands that you've taken again and again and again just in the last 10 years of your life. When you look at all of the things that you have overcome, the things that you have dealt with, the fears that you have been able to take in and open up and become free of, when you think of all of the accomplishments, then there comes a certain sense of, I have this capability, I am strong, I am competent, I can move on this earth plane with clear, magnificent power and light and wisdom. And because you are trained not to dwell on your skills and your beauty and your wonder, because you see, that makes you arrogant. Do you want to know a very deep truth? In all of my intimate work, I have never met a truly arrogant human being. Never. I have met some of you who became very skilled at projecting that image, but I have never, ever met a truly arrogant human being. In fact, as the arrogance begins to project itself out, what it is doing is referring back to often one of the most tender, one of the most frightened, one of the most unsure cores. And so when you understand that arrogance in... If you have a possibility, I want you please to never use that word about yourself ever again. It is not something that is truly who you are. Because at the heart of it all, my friends, and this is a lot of what we need to say today, is you are frightened. And one of the things that frightens you is not at the things that are going to happen to you, but you are frightened about yourself. There is this feeling inside of yourself that somehow you have been able to hurt others, that you have been able to do things incorrectly, that you have caused confusion and pain and suffering to other people. You carry along this sorrow, this tremendous sorrow, and a remembrance of the things that you have done that, in your words, that you ought not to have done. And if that's not bad enough, then you have another list of all those things that you should have done and you have not done. So between these two lists, you ride with this deep sense of incompletedness, of the inability to be a useful, dynamic, alive, loving, creative human being. You live with a sense inside of you that is quite different. And what we have asked you to do is to begin to acknowledge, to let in the wondrous feeling of praise for yourself. When is the last time that you sat down and praised yourself deeply? Not to make up things, but in a day's span, to go to bed in the evening, to sit in quiet contemplation of loving kindness to yourself, of giving to yourself all of those things that you had hoped the day would bring to you, that you may have gotten some measure of, maybe none of. But every night, this is the kind of comfort that you give to oneself that allows you the excited knowing of your own magnificence. Because, my friends, the mantras that you run inside your mind are negative. I do not care how many things you do right in a day. I promise you, if we had a way of hooking you up to a machinery, we would find that the things that you dwell on are the things that you did not do right. Everything that you said that was useful and helpful and dynamic and alive are forgotten. What you remember is what was not right, what was not well done, what brought pain and sorrow. And as we ask you to become alive and conscious to know yourself, what we are talking about is this part of you. My friends, when someone says, know yourself, most of you assume that to mean, I need to know more about my shadow. I need to know more about the things that are wrong with me. I need to know more about what whatever word you use about yourself is. And what we mean when we say know yourself is to allow yourself the same kindness, which is to allow all of the data in. You are holding on to selective data. And when you let go, move through the moment and begin to just vision, imagine the vastness of this space, what happens, my friends, is you begin, please hear this, you actually at that moment have identified and put your awareness on the vast part of your being, which includes all the magnificent light and wonder and God sense and total compassion that you all are in your true nature. You are able to begin to feel those vast moments, those vast parts of being that are close to you when you choose to identify with your small self. This takes practice. You have not been trained, and my friends, I ask you to realize that as the time, we've discussed this last month, as time is speeding up, as everything is moving in a very accelerated moment, you have got to start paying closer attention. You know, 50 years ago, you didn't have to pay so much attention. I mean, think of nothing else but just getting in your automobile and going down a road. 50 years ago, that was quite a joke. Now it's no joke. Now it's a serious business. Now, what you have done, whether you know it or not, on a very deep level, all mankind, all of humankind, has begun to maximize parts of consciousness, parts of their own being, that were not required 50 years ago, that were not required 100 years ago, but that are very much required now. Another way of saying this, this is the time when you're going to, if you allow yourself, to begin to explode into all of the available equipment. I'm speaking now psychically and energy-wise rather than in any form. The equipment that is there that is going to carry you with grace and wisdom and humor and beauty through this accelerated motion in the next, say, 20 years. You need different equipment than you did years ago. We've told you that, for example, in something like the 1400s, people didn't know that they had, they did not know that they had the visual capabilities that you now know you have. They didn't, literally did not see the world the way you see it. I don't mean they didn't translate it the way you translate it. I mean they didn't see it. They didn't believe in three-dimensional, vast abilities. They didn't understand, because there was no mental connection. They didn't understand about the great vault of heaven and what was beyond it. They didn't understand about spaceless space, timeless time. They didn't understand. But you, all those words, as you move into this magnificent acceleration, you are being presented with tremendous visual and mental images, which are the way that you begin to stretch yourself into those capacities that are awaiting. You are not going to be able to just move slowly. You're going to have to learn how to get vast very fast, and this is one of the simplest techniques I know. When you begin to practice vastness in the middle of your limitation, when you begin to be able to feel yourself steaming mad, without going through the mental process of, this is not a spiritual act. I am steaming mad, and if I were spiritual, I would not be upset. And then by that time, now you are upset at someone else, and you are now totally upset at yourself, and you're in a mess because you are mad, and now, not only that, you're spiritually unholy, unclean. I don't know what words you might use. In any way, you are not running around approving of yourself and saying, what a good thing this is. This is really wonderful. Now, how do you do it? You see, you can't fool yourself and pretend that being absolutely steaming angry is pouring love and light into this moment. You're not stupid. So you can't bypass that. And you know, this is why you have to be careful. This is why I ask you to be very careful about things like what are those things you put on the refrigerator all the time to remind you of?
Affirmations.
Thank you. Be careful of affirmations, because you can run it in a mental way that has nothing to do with any other part of your being. So what we're asking is, instead of going through a mental process first, the fastest way out is the way up, which means you simply, absolutely, in whatever way is most convenient for you, you begin to visualize and then experience vastness. It's like that wonderful shot in your television series, Star Wars? No. The one, no, Star Trek, thank you. Treks and Wars, which is this one. All right. And in one moment, the craft is stationary, and in the next moment, it's... You know that? That's what I'm talking about. Do you think that the man or woman, probably a man, that created that idea, excuse me, only because my understanding is that there are a lot more of them in the field than there are the feminine. Never mind. That's another subject. That magnificent, do you really think that limited person sitting in front of whatever machinery or whatever mental process was able to create something that so imitates? Do you not think you can do the original? Do you not see that that is just a simple, limited visual of something that you are capable of any moment without being able to create it in the visual form at all? You simply have the ability to travel that way. Now, I know it is very romantic to talk about space travel. I think space travel compared to inner travel is boring. I think that as you create greater and greater machinery to go greater, now instead of taking, 24 hours to get from Europe to New Zealand, now it will take, 3 years to go to another planet? I mean, you're going to have some long breathing time out there. And I think most of it is going to end up being very, very boring, you see. And I think because it's a replica, it's a duplicate, it's a facsimile, it's a pointing to something that is not truly valid of what you're truly seeking. What you're seeking is that acceleration out of your limited fear and mode in the moment into something vast now. And as you begin to understand that the inner voyage is immediate and doesn't take any kind of mechanism, it simply takes the willingness to practice the roadway, you begin to get it. And then you begin to find the expansion. And in that expansion, what begins to come to you is possibilities. total possibilities. The one thing that makes prison, being in a small space, so stultifying is that there are often very few ways out that are available to your conscious mind. That is because, once again, the conscious mind is the last to know, and it is certainly the last to know of a not yet created event. Let me say again. It is the last to know of a not yet created event. What do I mean? I mean that your ability to create anything, let us say the acceleration in a moment into a vast feeling that isn't just an idea, that is a real feeling and knowing that you are here in this compact space. I mean, this is about as compact as you want to get, isn't it? This is a pretty compact body here. To be able to have all of the delights of that, and at the same time to have at a moment's notice access to the vastness, which is also who you are, the process is to simply begin to tell yourself in very firm moment-to-moment conversation that this kind of thing is possible, is being ready to visualize it in whatever ways you can, is being able to know and realize that your conscious mind is the most limited part of your awareness system. Your thinking mind is the most limited part of your awareness system. It goes the least far. It has the least amount of new data. It is filled with old materials. Those of you that know computers, you know their limitations. When it comes to imagining, they have a lot to learn. But you don't need to imagine in the sense that you have as one of your absolute strongest parts of consciousness is that which I would call your creative, dynamic, intuitive beingness. And it is ever present. And it is the first and last statement on creating the new. And when you cease to look for it, when you continue to go to the mental mind, when you continue to think and to talk and to work in that more limited vein, you miss the dynamic potentiality. Again, we go back. What happens in an artistic creative moment? In that absolute bursting forward, bursting into, the artist knows themselves to be a simply one part of an amazing explosion. And the joy is, thank God they took me along. A real artist never says, oh, look what I did. A real artist says, thanks for taking me along, don't you? Thanks for the whole thing, the feeling, the vision, the inner, the outer, the body, the exaltation of a dynamic creative moment. And you know in that sense, in those moments, that there is a fragmentary part that is your limited self, as whoever you are playing out in this role at this time. But at the same time, this explosion of power is going on all the time around you. And it carries you. It lifts you too. They use the words, I was lifted out of myself. You know, it's interesting that they use the same kind of words for spiritual experiences as they use for artistic and sexual explosions. They're very similar. And the reason is that you get lifted out of yourself in some way. You become vaster, and at the same time, what you know to be yourself is more exalted, is more filled with a bubbling sense of life and continuation and extension and creation, and it's all of a wonder. Those feelings do not have to be limited to artists. That you are all artists of your own life, and if you will just begin to realize that as you begin to practice this incredible stretching, the incredible movement, you will begin. This is one thing we do in the workshops again and again until I'm sure many of you get very tired of it, is to practice this ever-present capability of how to expand in this moment into the vastness. You don't need a guide. All you need to do is to be willing to do it, and your own magnificent combination of being will begin to guide your way. As you begin to realize that you can be totally stationary and totally vast at the same time, that it is not either or, that it's not getting better, getting more righteous, getting more information, none of that. As you begin to, if I could say, be the voyager within that says, I know there's a passage here. I know there's a way. I know. And I'm just going to sit. So what is the directive? And this is what we'd like to remind you of. And I know this is not pleasing to some of you. My friends, unless you begin to have some kind of ordinary, daily experience of quieting down the external mechanisms of body and mind and emotion, you're going to find it much more difficult to touch on and move with the expansion of the vastness. What am I saying? Unfortunately, I'm almost presenting a rule, almost. But since I never present rules, this is an almost rule, which is, to however extent you can, please sit silent and quiet. I don't say call it meditation, because then all kinds of things can come in, but there are many magnificent, valid ways into the silence. Please use all of the work that so many have done before you. Find your way, and every day, please, to whatever extent you can, find the time to move deeply within, so that that pathway begins to be strengthened. Number one rule, if you're in chaos, shut up and sit down. And that is the last thing that you want to do. You want to run, you want to take a pole on the block, you want to get everybody feeling sorry for you, you want to, you know, I mean, after all, if you have to be miserable, don't do this alone. You know, get as many people playing your game as you can, and get out there, and you know, so on. All right, but, you see, all that does is just delays the moment of the quieting down. And when the quieting down becomes first order rather than secondary. First order, you begin to find in the midst of your sorrow, whatever it is, there is the peace and the knowing. Because listen to me, Peter, wherever you are and whatever you're doing, it is absolutely appropriate that you be doing it. Whatever you are doing, wherever you are doing it, it is absolutely appropriate that you be doing that. And when you understand that about yourself, then you will let your life, your people around you, relax so they can do it as well. And when you relax around yours and theirs, then what happens? This magnificent something called peace of the moment comes out. When you know that what you were doing is absolutely appropriate, not your conscious mind scolding you, doubting you, confusing you. It is those confusing thoughts that separate you from the tremendous magnificence of every moment, no matter how it's manifesting. Because you are not one layered individuals. You are multifaceted. And in the magnificent motion of all this, you are able to feel the tightness of this pain and the sorrow and so forth. But at the same time, that doesn't mean all the rest of the vault of heaven is not available. You can be in the midst of a tremendous storm and be at the same time aware of the billions and billions and billions of miles of calm and deep space, deep magnificent wonder. It isn't an either or, my friends. And when you begin to be willing to abandon holding on, then you begin. Now, let's talk about this holding on. Let me know when I need to stop. Abandoning this holding on. Now, the greatest detriment to happiness is the idea that you have to somehow stay totally focused in the midst of your pain and mental memory and physical discomfort and just run it through and through and through. Because if you're not watching this, who is? If you're not taking care of it, who's going to? If you're not worrying about it, who's going to worry about it? And if you're not worried about it, then who's going to stop it? So comes this tension. So instead of beginning to breathe, you know, I've said again and again, if you just begin to breathe with the depth of breathing, just breathing, feeling the rising and falling, and using any kind of imagery, which again, I'd like to make a very strong recommendation. I mentioned this at our workshop a few weeks ago. Stephen Levine has done an absolutely amazing job of bringing some of the most intensely useful heart and body meditations onto the earth plane. This particular text is called Healing into Life and Death. I absolutely recommend it. The reason is that he presents for you a beginning that allows you to build your own intimacy You will find, for example, if you just do the first meditation, which is on loving kindness, the loving kindness is not to others. The loving kindness is to yourself. And the illnesses and the difficulties that you have, the emotional tension, the emotional pressure, most of this is because there's not enough room in you, because you are crammed full of all of this and it hasn't been let go. And then you begin to feel inside yourself that you're going to explode. In fact, it's very interesting because many people, right before they get angry, they begin to feel like they are going to explode. Now, this is a very interesting thing because it's real. What has happened is you have gathered endlessly all this material. It's very much like the garbage can, you see, pardon me. But it's just like collecting the garbage and forgetting the easy mechanism of taking it outside, of just disposing of it. So it's the accumulation. You know, you're stuck with it, you're stuck. Well, you're not. Now, these kinds of roads in, as best we can in the remaining months that we have, we'd like to present pathways that we feel will be strong and carry you to your goal of pure, total, conscious knowing of who you are. And certainly, Stephen Levine's work stands in that category. He rests on a very substantial basis of not only self-experimentation and knowing what it does to himself, but also in working under tremendously stressful situations with the dying and so forth. This is good work. And this is the same kind of work that you begin on yourself. And as you begin day by day, and you don't have to say, well, I can't do it because I don't have an hour. You know, you have 3 minutes. Do it. You know, you're walking to your car, do it. You're whatever you're doing. You have many, many moments. As you begin, my friends, what you begin to do as you begin to give yourself this loving kindness is you begin to, if I could be literal, you're not so heavy. So then the letting go and the lift off is easier. So that as you begin to feel the tremendous sorrow that you carry within yourselves, then you'll begin to understand your problem is not anger. Your problem is sorrow. The problem is sorrow. This planet is crying. And all of the wars that are going on in the hearts, how many are there now? How many do they say? 60, 70? How many wars are going on right this moment? What is the base? Is this hatred and rage? It appears that way. I want you to know it is tremendous sorrow. Hearts filled with sorrow and remorse and regret and not knowing where to go to lighten the heart. And trying to have, you know, steamy love affairs. Well, you know, they don't lighten the heart for very long because then they become part of the problem. And now, you see, and then, so I'm asking you, no, of course, have all the love affairs that you can possibly afford and tolerate, whatever, it's entirely up to you. But what I am asking is stop asking for the world to give you the thing that you can gift yourself with. Stop, please, wanting to be gifted outside in a crazy, desperate way, or even in a calm and desperate way, and to realize that you can gift yourself. How? With simple things like this, simple ways of remembrance, simple ways that we have discussed until you all heard them too long, and then you begin to create your own ways. You begin to find that you are your path, that you are the way to your truth and your light. You begin to feel safe and secure. So you begin to realize that this kind of work begins to build inside of you that feeling of expansion in the midst of this most limited life that you can possibly construct. Now, these experiments of consciousness, of deep loving kindness meditations, giving the word often used is mercy. Mercy to oneself. You know, the way to forgiveness, if you know the word here. What is the answer to the sorrow of the planet? And you know the word. And what is necessary is forgiveness. But that is a very misunderstood word. And when one goes around saying with a wonderful, supercilious smile on your face, I forgive you, you know exactly how unuseful that is. Because not only does it do nothing to help the other person, but they probably are having an accelerated feeling of the reason that you wanted to forgive them in the first place. You see, because it is not the way of it. What is forgiveness? I know many of you do the Course in Miracles. By all means, I am not trying to set up anything other than that. That's do what you need. But very, very substantial. Forgiveness, just said very plainly, is taking loving energy, compassionate energy, from the vast part of your being and turning it on the parts of your being that are in pain, that are in sorrow, that are in fear. And you take the vastness and you just begin to fill those places within you that are crying. You fill it, you do it over and over again, moment after moment, day after day. You begin to give words, because you understand words. You put words in those empty places. You put words of absolute compassion and understanding of yourself to yourself. You gift yourself with it. And what often happens is you begin to heal not only the mental, but the emotional and the physical. It is very difficult to heal yourself if you are not in love with yourself. I do not mean in a narcissistic manner. If you are not in a state of love for yourself, it is very difficult to let healing energy in, because in the end, my friends, it is you who heal yourself. And it is you who allow the healing energy. Now, it may be that you have enough faith in the medical profession to allow them to heal you, but it is you who've done it. They act absolutely as the ambassadors of goodwill, but it is you who allow them in the gates. And when you ask yourself why you cannot heal your emotions, why you cannot heal your pain or your anger or your resentment or your self-pity or your money or your, I don't know, whatever, I ask you all, please, instead of thinking of very, very fancy ways, would you please first give the thought, is it perhaps possible that I don't love myself? That I am not giving myself that perfect, wonderful inundation of well-being, that sense of well-being? Have you found that when you are in a state of well-being, you can love others very well? You can love them very well. They can do some atrocious things, and you find yourself smiling with great understanding and saying, that's okay. Let them try it another time when you are not in such a state, and the result is quite different. Now, it's the same person, it's the same act, you're the same. What is the difference? The difference is that sense of when you have given yourself loving kindness and mercy and a deep sense. You see, forgiveness means you've done something wrong and now you're going to feel that somebody's forgiven you. That isn't forgiveness. What happens is this amazing energy field of tremendous non-judgmental love and compassion, which is your basic nature, which is 99% of what your psyche is made up of, begins to inundate the limited 1% that you've been addictedly paying attention to. It is so overwhelmingly immense compared to the smallness of the difficulty that you begin to feel inundated with the let go, inundated with the smile, inundated with the love and the compassion and the wisdom. You begin to be and express exactly those parts of your nature that you have been longing to say to others. If you become that way, it isn't, you see, you cannot force yourself to love someone. This is why when you deal with children, for heaven's sake, the least helpful thing is just love them. Someone's having trouble with the child next door. Oh, stop that. Just love them. Yes, well, how does one do this? You see, I'm saying that there are ways, from very small children over to the very other end of the scale, where these kinds of things are going to begin to be put into the upbringing system. This planet is going to change its face a lot. And this is one of the main ways it will change. You begin to gift yourself with the things that you have been desperately longing for the external world to gift you with. Now, one of the difficulties, let's talk about this one, it always arises, is the physical body itself. In nowhere, at no time in the creation of human consciousness have you been so hard on your physical bodies as you are now. Your rules and regulations for how they look, how much they weigh, how much they do sag or don't sag, and where they do this and where they go in and where they go out, and how much they can do this and how much they can do that, whatever. All of this, I cannot tell you the rules. And those rules impinge on your state of well-being every moment, every moment, every moment. You cannot always look like you're 21. And most people that are 21 are trying to look like something else anyway. So there's really no way out. What is the way out? The way out is when you begin to flood your body with messages of its own beauty, you will begin to find something very interesting. That a beauty that transcends the ideas that your culturated world has presented, the very idea of what true beauty is begins to emerge in you. You begin to experience yourself as absolutely beautiful. And you know that the world would say, "Huh, you must be joking." But that isn't the point. That isn't the point. It isn't the point. It is the way that you move in your world with the grace of your own beauty that begins to make itself known on the world. The people who are seen as the most deeply beautiful are often not so at all. But there is something radiantly present, and it is almost always an internal something, a knowing something. And how do you get that? You get that by beginning to flood the body with these images, with these ideas, and to begin to feel the beauty of this incredible, this is an orchestration of such incredible, amazing mystery. And when you begin to stop focusing on the external and begin that wonderful gifting within, you will begin to feel yourself. And what happens is you begin to relax. You begin to not mind if you put on 5 pounds or take off whatever, I don't know, whatever the rules are. And when you begin to understand that beauty is an inside job, something that you give to yourself, then you begin to see beauty outside. You begin to not only see it, but it stops you right in your tracks in total admiration and awe of the most mundane thing. Many people have said things like seeing a flower pushing its way through concrete on a sidewalk in a busy city just in a moment brings them into the amazing thing. Not so much because of the flower, but because you know that you've done this. This is you. This is you. This is what you're doing all the time, my friends. You live in a concrete world. I mean, the mental constructs are so rigid and strict upon you that I think it's amazing that you grow at all. And when you do, it's this explosion of knowing. So please, find out what you have been. This is the homework assignment for now and the rest of your life. Please begin to focus on the things moment to moment that you are yearning to get from your external world. Now, that's tricky for those of you who have been in relationship for a long time, because the rules get very complicated. And, you know pretty much who's supposed to do what, and you know that if they don't do what, then it means they don't love you. And I mean, the rules are complex. But when you begin to be quiet and steady, you'll begin to understand, asking yourself very intimately, what am I looking for? What am I desiring? What am I trying to get? What am I trying to get? And when you begin to be clear about this, then you begin to find, as illustrated in these very simple meditations, you begin to get the sense inside of yourself of gifting yourself with that feeling, with those words. You start with the words. Most of you absolutely do not believe that you are beautiful in any way. You absolutely do not, and it is very difficult to begin an exercise that says you are filled with deep, intense beauty. To just begin to say, I am filled with magnificent beauty and wonder and softness and whatever you find as you go in. And you'll find yourself saying these things. And some of you gentlemen who have taught to be very, very rigid and very, very dutiful and very, very strong begin to find yourself being very, very soft and very, very almost like dough and very mushy and mushy, you see. And then all of this begins and you begin to sense things. And as you gift yourselves, you begin to stop screaming at your world to give it to you. This is further complicated by the idea that if you didn't get it from your parents, you can't get it. I want to say that again. There is commonly around in the world of therapy today an idea that if you didn't get something from your parents, that's just too bad, you're never going to get it. I want to say as strongly as I can, with as much consideration for the therapist as I can, that this is not a true statement. That the first idea that you wanted it from your parents was the original lie. The original statement that you wanted it from your parents was the first lie. It was the first secondary step. Because as you begin to understand the whole process of life, you begin to realize that what it is, being an adult means being responsible for gifting yourself with all of those deep things that you so deeply want. And as you begin to gift yourself gently and deeply, you begin to find that you have that capacity to gift others. Whether they will be able to take in your gift or not is entirely up to them. But the whole knowing that that is your part of the inner responsibility. Do you understand, my friends? The world was not set up so that you would have to struggle and not get. I honestly believe that many of you believe that the world is structured so that you will need and want and yearn and not get. That is not true. It is not true. Now, it is true that if you only have one leg and you really want to run the marathon with people with two legs, that's an impossibility. But if you look deeply, you'll find that isn't what you want at all. That what you really wanted was a sense of your own total adequacy with your difficulty. The sense of your own magnificent truth and trust and power and ability and creativity. Well done. That's the hardest part. To be able to realize, look deeply at your desires, and if it's a surface desire, almost always what is really, what your heart really yearns for is something under that. So go deeper, go deeper, go deeper. If you find yourself separated in time, space from someone, don't allow yourself to believe that that is possible. There's no such thing as time, space. There are ways for two psyches to blend absolutely in total knowing and intimacy, no matter where they are on the face of this planet, or if one has even left the planet. Those are limitations, and they are not true. Remember the basic rule of consciousness: there is but one, and there are no separations in that one. And any ideas that there are come from your limited ego, which is masquerading as the master of the material plane, and it is not. And when you begin to allow yourself to know what you want and to see how you can gift yourself of that, then you begin to be a mature human being. That means your full potential begins to come forward. That means all of these magnificent gifts that are waiting to be given to you as you move through these fascinating years to come, all will be, you know, I love this statement, all will be revealed. Is that Sherlock Holmes? All will be revealed. Well, it will be. But, you know, you have to be sitting around looking for it to hear it and to feel it and to know it and to live it and to be it. So, my friends, please, please. The macrocosm and the microcosm, what does that silly thing mean? It means that those things that you visualize and imagine are only possible in the macrocosm outside, are totally there and present in the microcosm of your own intimate being. So, my friends, just know what you want, begin to gift yourself, and do it over and over again. And what will happen is things beyond your conscious mind to understand. You will begin to break out of limitations. You will begin to move into a creative life in the midst of the most mundane. You will be able to find parts of your being that you've been waiting for other people to give to you. And most of all, you will begin to know with the most deeply intimate feeling of your own magnificent, amazing wonder. You are all of it. You are interconnected and with no limitations. But you have to find that out. Well, thank you for listening. For those of you that would like to, we'll have 10 minutes. Thank you.